Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. With the Labour Party conference now in full swing in Liverpool, Jeremy Corbyn sat down to be interviewed by Andrew Marr. Marr was keen to challenge Corbyn about the accusations of anti-Semitism that have dogged the Labour Party and the failure to effectively stamp out the problem. Corbyn attempted to set the record straight.
Jeremy Corbyn, are you an anti-Semite?
No, absolutely not. I've spent my whole life opposing racism in any form, and I will die fighting racism in any form.
It's extraordinary that I even have to ask the question, who in your view gets to decide what is anti-Semitic?
We have adopted the IHRA definition, and the Jewish community have a definition of what anti-Semitism is, and that has been included in our Labour Party processes. And I think anyone that's suffering racism is in a position to define it. Be it Islamophobia, anti-Semitism, or far-right racism. I want to live in a society where all faiths are respected. I want to live in a society where we are free of racism in any form. That means that all communities must be able to live in safety, including all Jewish communities. There are Jewish people in every part of this country who make an incredible contribution. There are Jewish people who founded this party.
For obvious reasons, you're talking to me at the moment, Jeremy Corbyn. There's an awful lot of Jewish people who just desperately want you to express personal remorse for what's happened. And maybe you could look at the camera and apologise to them.
I'll simply say this. I am an anti-racist and will die an anti-racist. Anti-Semitism is a scourge in any society. I will oppose it all my life and I will continue to oppose it all my life. Under my leadership in this party, we've been more specific about the definition. We've set up much better processes for dealing with incidents within the party, and we're improving them even further to make sure that any complaints are dealt with quickly. The party must be and is a safe and welcoming place for all communities.
Let me say one thing to you, as it were, personally about this. I have talked to Jewish people who have been long-term, perhaps all their lives, supporters of the Labour Party, and some of them are thinking about leaving this country if you become Prime Minister.
Well, I say to them, stay in this country. Let's work together in this country. We need a better health service. We need to deal with the housing crisis. We need better quality of employment. We need a better sense of community. That sense of community in the Jewish community and many other communities is one that we can all learn lessons from.
The Brexit Secretary, Dominic Raab, also featured as one of Marr's guests. After a disappointing week for the Prime Minister, which saw her Brexit proposals flatly rejected at an EU summit in Salzburg, Raab insisted that all was not lost.
Now, you blamed the EU for what happened in Salzburg, but isn't the truth that this was a catastrophic failure of British intelligence and diplomacy and indeed politics as well?
Well, actually, if you look at the readout and the media has covered various different aspects of it, it's clear a change was made very late on by the EU in their response. But look, this is a bump in the road. We'll hold our nerve, we'll keep our cool, and we'll keep negotiating good faith. I think we need to keep these negotiations going. What we're not going to be is dictated to. And the UK is one of the biggest economies in Europe, if not in the world. We've come up with a serious set of proposals, 100 pages long, our white paper, covering everything from trade to security. We're not just going to flit from plan to plan like some sort of diplomatic butterfly. We're going to be resolute about this and really press the EU to treat us with some respect and also on the substance to engage properly. And at the same time, we've always said our top priority, our overriding priority, is a negotiated outcome, but we'll continue planning for no deal in case our ambition isn't matched, and we've got some more technical notices coming out on Monday.
If you go back to the next summit in November with a tweaked version of Chequers and you get the same kind of response, does the Prime Minister then have to walk out?
Well, the next landmark or milestone, if you like, will be the October Council. And I'm not going to predict in advance what will happen there, but I'm confident that if the ambition, the pragmatism we've shown on all of the detail, on the substance, a set of proposals that gives effect to the referendum, that's faithful to the will of the British people, but also looks at what matters and what the EU is concerned about. If that ambition and pragmatism is matched, we get a deal. But if we just get this sort of computer says no response from the EU, we're not going to make progress. So as the Prime Minister has said, we need some give, some flex, and some give and take, if you like, from the EU. And I'm confident that as the fallout from Salzburg ebbs, we'll make further progress. Mm.
The former Education Secretary and soft Brexit advocate, Nicky Morgan, joined Sophie Ridge to discuss where she thought the government should go next after the Salzburg summit.
Well, this week, the EU made it pretty clear that they don't think that Theresa May's Chequers plan will work. As a result, we've had Conservative Brexiteers tweeting using the hashtag ChuckChequers. What's your view? Is there any life left in Chequers?
Well, I'm not sure there is life left in Chequers. I think the big question for those of us, and you're absolutely right, who want to see a deal, I think a no-deal scenario would be incredibly bad for our economy, for our businesses, for job security, for our constituents. So we want to see a deal. And the issue is, of course, what is going to be approved by the UK Parliament when the negotiations are finished. And that's of critical importance. And I know some of my colleagues are going to launch this call for a Canada-style free trade agreement tomorrow. That's not going to get approved by Parliament and has many flaws, including not dealing with Northern Ireland. So it's really a non-starter.
So what do you think Parliament and the Prime Minister should be looking at? Because she basically said, didn't she, that the EU has put two things on the table, a free trade deal, which you just rejected in that answer, and the other one was effectively staying in the European Economic Area and Customs Union, which would be accepting uncontrolled immigration. So is that the option that you want to see?
Well, I don't accept the premise that would mean uncontrolled immigration. So let's sort of take a step back.
That's what the EU is saying.
To the single market. Well, the whole point, this is a negotiation. This is the issue. I mean, I think both sides, in a way, have been talking across purposes for the best part of 18 months now, and time is ticking away. Actually, the point is there is a sweet spot, I'm firmly of the opinion, that can be found both with the EU and then with Parliament. It's a question of unlocking it. That's why carrying on with the negotiations, I think Dominic Raab, the Brexit Secretary, is right. It's a time for cool heads and getting on with the negotiations. But having access to the single market via the European Free Trade Area membership, we were a founding member, the UK, of that, and their definition of free movement is different. It's free movement of workers. And I think that's important because the British public have a much more nuanced understanding of immigration than I think that the debate reflects.
Labour's deputy leader Tom Watson also joined Ridge at the Labour conference, where it is highly likely that delegates will vote to make a second Brexit referendum official party policy. Ridge asked whether the leadership would respect this outcome.
Now, we were talking there about the prospect of this people's vote or second referendum, however you want to call it. Is that something you want to see?
Well, look, I want the conference to be able to debate it. And, one of the things that Jeremy and I said when we were elected 3 years ago was we want to give the party back to its members. And I've been very pleasantly surprised by the number of constituencies that have submitted resolutions this year. There's over 100 on this area. They're in a room now discussing what we call compositing, and I want the conference to have a good debate on it.
If you want to have a general election, should it be in the Labour Party manifesto then that Labour would offer a people's vote or a second referendum, if that's what conference says?
Well, we decide our manifesto in the first few days of a general election, and there are a lot of things you need to factor in, the prevailing economic climate, the whole other packages in there. It seems to me inconceivable that if the Labour Party democratically decides, the Labour Party Congress decides it wants a manifesto pledge on a people's vote, that we would defy that decision. But I'm already in the boundaries of talking hypotheticals with you. I think we need to have the debate at the conference and see what our delegates decide to do.
So the key question, as we're talking about the possibility of a second referendum, how would you vote in it? If there was a second referendum, would you vote to stay in the EU, would you vote for no deal, or would you vote for Theresa May's deal?
I voted Remain in the last referendum. I think it is highly likely that I'd probably vote Remain in the next one, but I would look at what the question is on offer, and I'd want to know what the deal is that comes out of the negotiations in Europe, if that happens.
And finally, after a ruling from Labour's National Executive Committee that the party should create a new deputy leadership post for women only, Lisa Nandy has recommended going one step further.
I don't really think this is quite enough. I actually really welcome this announcement from the NEC today. I think it's absolutely essential, actually, that we've got a woman somewhere near the top of the party. But I don't think that that should stop a deputy leader. I think we should be looking at this sort of system for leader as well. When I was the Shadow Energy Secretary, I had a three-month-old...
So what's that, like two leaders, effectively?
Well, what I'd actually like to see is if those positions open to job sharing, a bit like in the Green Party. When I was Shadow Energy Secretary, I had had a three-month-old baby. I was commuting up and down from Wigan, where all my family and friends were and all of my support networks. I was lucky in that I had a fantastic shadow team who really stepped up and stepped into those leadership roles and helped me so that I didn't have to be on telly at 5 o'clock in the morning and then at midnight again, that we could share out some of that. But it would have been great for me to be able to job share.
Could you do it if you're Prime Minister? Because if you're doing it for leader of the Labour Party, then presumably you'd be talking about a job share for Prime Minister.
I think you absolutely could. I mean, women do tend to lead in that sort of way, collective leadership, and try to bring people with them. And actually, when you look at the mess that this country's in at the moment, I think that's exactly the sort of thing that we need.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and you can get a great deal on the magazine with 12 issues for just £12 and a free limited edition Spectator thermally insulated water bottle. Just visit spectator.co.uk/water. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/evening blend. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.